Good day, everybody. I'm David Irvin. I'm a leadership development specialist and a best-selling author, and we want to welcome you to the Leaders Navigator podcast. The premise is simple. The podcast will provide you with insights for living and leading the authentic way so that you'll be better equipped to amplify your impact as a difference maker in any area in your life. We'll cover a variety of topics related to authenticity and what it means to bring humanity into the world. What's uniquely special is that I'm doing this podcast together with my daughter, Haley. We are excited about this opportunity to work jointly on this project that we're both so passionate about. Haley, welcome to another episode. You just got back from spring break. 2 weeks, you're all fresh.
Yeah. And
ready to go with your students, see?
Fresh and rejuvenated. They're, I don't know if they're more productive than they were before spring break, but you know, here we are. Here we are. They're all just, I think, it's just, you know, this time of year where, especially because, you know, teaching high school, that senioritis tends to set in, which is just a term that we give when grade 12 students are into their university programs and then they just kind of coast. They're like, we're almost done. And the weather gets better and it's just, you know, but it's good. It's everyone's in a good mood. It's just hard to get them focused on schoolwork.
Not to mention, it must be hard to get you focused because you and I are getting ready to go to your sister's wedding in Mexico in about 10 days.
Yeah, so that'll be great. I'm really excited about that too. Get away from, currently it's, I guess it's blizzarding at this time of this recording. Hey, Dad?
It is blizzarding here in Alberta. Welcome to spring in Calgary. Now, you had a fascinating topic to cover today. And it all has to do with immediate gratification. Do you want to talk about some of the observations you've had with your parents and your students?
Yeah. So I think, like, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, places where I start to see this. But I especially see this, I think, where, and this is where I kind of, you know, got thinking about this. It's kind of where it started was, and I mean, I know I work with a very different demographic. I do work at a private school. So I know, you know, this is not the norm for most teenagers, but some of these kids talk about, and these are high school students, they talk about how their parents give them, you know, $50 a week in allowance. Sometimes, you know, $20 a week, whatever. And then they go out at lunch and they come back from the drugstore, the grocery store, whatever, with probably about $20 worth of like candy, cookies, pop, junk food, essentially, right? Or they go out for lunch with their friends and, you know, they spend, you know, $20 on a burger and fries, right? And then at the same time, like I hear them complaining about how worried they are for university and how worried they are to be able to afford residence and tuition and all of this kind of stuff. Right. And then, at the same time, I still see, like, you know, I like to involve myself in fashion. I think fashion and design is fascinating. So I see them, you know, buying these $150 pair of running shoes and, you know, their $400 AirPods and all of this kind of thing too. And I see, like, the stuff and the consumerism that they engage in. And then I also see how their attention spans are significantly shorter and how hard it is to get them engaged in anything that's long and hard and challenging. So I was like trying to think about if these two things connect. And I think they do, because I think it's all about that instant gratification. I think it's spending money on something quick that's there and it's something that'll give them pleasure right in that moment. And, you know, there's, you know, a couple of trends online that I've been noticing too. So one that's kind of been hitting the social media airwaves, if you will, is called the Dorito theory. And the Dorito theory, I don't know if you've heard of this, Dad, but the Dorito theory is that the most addicting things, and I don't know, like, I don't know if this is a social media theory, so I don't know if this has been extensively, you know, peer reviewed and studied by any means, but this woman, you know, kind of gained viral fame about saying that the most addictive things are the things that aren't fully satisfying. So things like Doritos, right? They don't actually satisfy your hunger. They're not protein full. They're not, you know, they're not fully satisfying to your body, but they're almost there, which is why they're addicting, right? They, you know, they taste good in that moment. You know, they satisfy a quick little urge, but they're not ultimately satisfying in the long term. And that's why they're so addicting. And that's why you can't stop eating Doritos. So I was thinking all of these things are connected. And, you know, as somebody who, as you know, struggles with ADHD myself, like that instant gratification, that quick fix now is so much more appealing to anything that takes longer and that, you know, it's the impact and the consequences is way far in the future, that it sometimes it's even hard to even like contemplate waiting for something that takes longer or is more challenging or more difficult or what have you, because I just want that thing right now. I don't know. Can you relate to any of that? Like, I'm sure in finances, like I'm sure there's lots of other applications of this too.
Well, what intrigues me, and whether it's a $50 allowance or a $10 a week allowance, that you get more than you really need. And when we overdo for kids, that's what I'm intrigued with. What's the impact of that? When we do too much to make kids happy, when the goal is to make kids happy and we continually give them what they don't need, what's the impact of that? And I'm getting a sense that, you know, that they don't learn to wait. They don't, they have a short attention span. They have a desire for a quick fix. And I wonder if they quit too early as well. I'm just wondering about what the impact is of overdoing for your kids.
I think that's a really good point, because like what that parent could be doing, instead of just giving them that amount of money that they could then go and spend on junk food, what that parent could be doing is saying, you know, helping them learn basic financial literacy, right? That if they took that $20 and they put it, you know, $20 a week, $100 a month, they put it in a savings account, right? And they teach them about interest, right? How much more that would go, right? And how long, and like, and actually how like $100 a month, that's, you know, $200 every 2 months, and how much more that money would go if they just wait long-term. And then they can actually buy something that's more worthwhile and more important than just like bags of Oreos every day, right? And I think like that's a piece that I really worry about. And I know like every generation complains about the generation beneath them. I know that. I get that, right? But I do think though that there is not as much of a value placed on persevering through and waiting and being patient and putting the work in, as opposed to hard and fast. I think this is a huge thing in our culture right now, right? And I mean, you see this with social media, right? Like social media is designed to keep your attention immediately right there and then and now. It's designed to be addictive. It's designed to provide instant gratification, right? It's not designed to work on something long-term. It's designed to be colorful and stimulating and give you those dopamine hits, right? And that's why it's so addicting. And so these teenagers now, the ones that I'm teaching, right? These kids don't know a world without an iPhone. They were born in, since Facebook has become, and I know Facebook is like, you know, not even relevant for teenagers anymore, right? But they don't know a world without social media, right? And I see this too in not just, you know, what the teenagers are engaging in, but I look at children's media as well, right? Like, it is so stimulating and instant in terms of like the music and the sounds and the colors and the fast-paced plot. And it's not about these long drawn-out stories. It's not about like a story that continues over several episodes, right? And I really think that that's also why students aren't, or like kids in general, are not drawn to something like reading. They're not drawn to you know, something that it like puzzles or things that take sustained effort over amounts of over like a period of time, and instead are about the here and the now, and they're about, you know, just feeling good in this moment, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense. What's the impact on their psychology with this kind of a instant gratification mindset? How does it impact their study habits? And, you know, the interesting thing that comes to mind is this is the time to learn to invest. Don't start investing when you're in your 50s. Start when you're in your late teens. And it's compound interest that will have so much more impact. But we don't think long term, these kids, hey?
No, I don't think so. And honestly, I will consider myself as sort of, you know, I am a millennial, right? But I think like, you know, whether it's ADHD, whether it's, you know, still spending a lot of time online and with this instant gratification stuff, like I really struggled to start my retirement savings plan. I really struggled to start that. I'm finally now all taking care of that. I get that. But for me, it was really hard to wrap my head around taking a portion of my salary and tucking it away when I felt like I needed my full salary right now to sustain my life, right? But it felt really hard for me to think about when I'm 65, when I'm 75, right? And saving for that, because that to me seemed so, especially at the cusp, like the beginnings of my career, right? It felt very like easy to put off saving for the end of my career, right? That's decades from now, right? And so like, I'm fully guilty of that, right? And how I think had I really, I don't even know if it's a maturity thing or like practicing with those skills, like had I, you know, from a financial perspective, right? Had I started realizing like the value of a savings account, right? And compound interest and all this, like I know it all cognitively, right? Like that's the other thing too. Like I knew all of these things. I learned about it in math class, right? Like you guys taught this to me, right? But it was something else to actually like learn about it on paper and then to actually adopt it and practice it myself, right? And so, I mean, I see that there too. And then I see it with students already, right? That, you know, even just like the way that I teach, I've had to adapt it quite a lot. And this is where I'm torn, right? Like whether or not to adapt and meet the needs of current students or whether or not it's about getting these students to learn these skills, right? And you know, teaching the, you know, a way of teaching that attention span, right? It's, you know, but these, you know, like they, if it's something like a bigger project that takes a long time to work on, right? Something like a final summative project or a lab report or a big essay, right? They really struggle with starting it early and chipping away at it until it's due. The number of times, like, and I honestly believe it's 80 to 90% of my students, right? That, because I can see when they submit it online, they submit it at like 2 a.m. They submit it at 1:30 in the morning, right? Like they submit it in the middle of the night, the day before, right? And if I go back and I look at their document, because this is the joy of digital technology now, right? Is that you can actually see the history of it. And I can see that like they start it like months ago or a month ago, whatever. They write a couple lines and then they don't touch it for a long time. And then you just see a huge block the day before it's due, right? And it's funny that like, you know, they still get it done, right? But it really takes those firm deadlines to make them actually do it. Right. I don't know, Dad, have you seen the TED talk on the mind of a master procrastinator? It's Tim Urban. I don't know if you've seen this TED talk, but he has a really great metaphor that he's, you know, he's a, you know, he talks about his life in academia, but he says his brain, it's worth listening to. I'll send it to you. But he says his brain, if you can imagine like the steering wheel in his brain that makes decisions, right? Most people have a rational decision maker at the wheel, right? And this rational decision maker is the one calling all the shots. But the problem he faces is that he has an instant gratification monkey that takes over the steering, right? And leads you to a dark playground. And the dark playground is where you're in this instant gratification land, but you feel like crap about it because you're doing all these like leisurely things, but you don't feel good about it. It doesn't feel earned, right? And this gratification monkey is telling you to go on a deep dive through the YouTube vortex of like the Tonya Harding scandal, right? When you need to actually be working on something else relevant, right? And he said that the only thing that this instant gratification monkey is scared of is the panic monster. And that panic monster only can wake up and come about when you have a deadline, right? And so when I look at all of these like instant gratification opportunities that we have in our quick, fast-paced society, right? The panic monster doesn't show up like for like, if I think about me saving for retirement, right? Like that panic monster is not going to show up until, you know, I'm in my like late 40s, early 50s. And I realize that retirement's around the corner. And by then it's too late, right? Or, you know, for these kids who are spending all of this money on junk food and things like that, that panic monster might not actually ever wake up for them. And they might continue to spend, you know, little bits of money on all of these like, you know, impulse buys and things like that for the rest of their life. Right. And so like what happens when there aren't deadlines, when there aren't these things to awaken the panic monster, and then those instant gratification monkeys are going to be at the helm for a long time.
What's the lesson? There's, you know, like the question would be directed toward two groups, the parents. Is there a lesson that we need to instill in kids? Part of this is natural immaturity, that we don't think long term, that we think just instantaneously, but it's compounded with the instant gratification of social media. I don't know that we're actually comfortable with this thing called boredom, that we get very afraid when we're bored and we feel like we have to fill that vacuum rather than just sit with boredom and realize that there can be a lot of creativity emerge when we allow ourselves to just be bored. I schedule time in what Cal Newport would call deep work. Just schedule time in 90 minutes increments of time that is allowed for deep work, which means uninterrupted work that requires deep concentration. And I go through periods during that time of boredom because you do not allow yourself to be distracted. You can't pick up email during that time. You're off sequestered into a different world. And you give yourself permission spatially and psychologically to distance yourself from the distractions of the world. And during those periods, boredom will emerge when you have a blank. And that's actually where the richness comes from, the creativity, because these are deeply that require deep concentration and deep thinking. And what'll happen during that boredom is that the emergence of really creative ideas will come out of that if you just ride out the boredom and resist the tendency to distract yourself. And so where was I going with that? Where's the lesson for parents, and where's the lesson for all of us in this distracted world?
I think for parents, like, and regardless of how old the kid is, I think feeling responsible for their attention span and feeling responsible for them, for their entertainment, like, that is not the job of parents, right? Parents need to, like, obviously provide opportunities, but it's not up to the parents to, you know, plan all these activities out. It's not up to the parents to say, here's what you're going to do today, this activity, this activity, this activity, this activity, right? Regardless of how old the kid is, right? Because that actually doesn't teach the child's accountability and autonomy, I think, for that, right? So I think that's huge, right? Like, not feeling like they're responsible to entertain these kids. I think the other thing is, and these are all connected to embracing boredom, I think the other piece as well is designating screen time, right? Like, really, really finding time as a family, as individuals. And this also means parents need to model this too, right? Because I see parents addicted to their phones too. And I'm also guilty of this, right? But I think, like, really, and I know we've said this before, but, you know, like, finding times to put the phones out of sight, right? Because as soon as we see the phone, it becomes a temptation, right? But if the phones are out of sight, if they're in another room, if they're, like, not plugged in at the bedside, right, when you're trying to go to bed, right? But finding places to put that phone so that you aren't looking at it and you aren't tempted by those notifications and to do the endless scrolling, right? I think that's a huge thing for both parents and for kids, right? And then also, so then when you don't have your phone, like, that is a perfect opportunity for boredom. When you aren't around these, like, screens, that's a really great opportunity for boredom. And then I think also too is find opportunities to do things that don't involve immediate gratification. So things like books, things like low stimulation television and movies, right? Things that were made 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and embracing those kind of movies that aren't that fast paced, go, 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 like the way that they are now, right? Finding those movies that go a little bit slower, doing puzzles, board games, right? Going on walks, right? Like, these activities that don't provide those dopamine hits can be huge. And then I think too, like, when kids are unable to see the long-term consequences of something, something that's concrete and tangible is money for kids, right? And that's it can be a really good money, or also things like gardening, right? Gardening is another great example, or taking care of plants, getting good at a skill or a sport, something like that. But these skills that take sustained effort over a long period of time, and then talking with your kids, reflecting with your kids about the progress that they've made over something that takes a significant amount of time. So money is a good one, because with interest and things like that, or also just, like, putting a little bit in at regular intervals and then seeing how much you have at the end, or like, you know, as you go along. Things like gardening or plants can be really satisfying because these things don't grow very quickly, right? They take sustained effort over a long period of time. Things like getting good at a skill or a sport, like especially one that is measurable, because I think that's the other thing too, right? So something like, you know, lifting weights at the gym, that can be kind of nice because you see like the weight that you can lift and the amount that you can do or how far you can run. You see that gradually start to increase, but that doesn't happen in one day, right? And so teaching these skills through these like tangible meeting of goals can be really, really helpful for kids. Right. And so, and then that also too, like the value of waiting, the value of sustained effort, of grit. Another one that we, you know, a tool that I always recommend with parents and with kids is that if you tell a kid to just get their homework done, they're not going to get it done. But what a parent can do to intervene, other than, you know, take their phone away or hide their phone, is if you start a timer for 20 minutes. And again, depends on like the timing depends on the age of the kid. Right? Like a teenager might be able to do 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, whereas like a younger elementary might 5 or 10. You start a timer for that time. You let the child see the timer, right? It could be like an egg timer. It could be like a countdown clock in the kitchen. And they just have to struggle for that amount of time, right? At first. And, you know, start with lower intervals, right? And as the child builds up their attention span and builds up their stamina, it can increase that. They just have to struggle for that amount of time. Then they can have a break. Or if at that moment they're feeling really motivated, then they can keep working, right? But by having like a 15-minute timer, right? They just have to struggle for 15 minutes. They just have to struggle for 20 minutes, right? And then gradually you can increase that time and that can really help them. You know, that's all that it's not about struggling till it gets done. It's just about struggling for something, again, concrete. So like just time for minutes, if that makes sense.
I love that. Two things come to mind. First of all, this notion of learning to do deep work and not be distracted and focused, learning to be focused. Cal recommends you start with 15 minutes of of uninterrupted time so that you concentrate and then you begin to increase that over time. But you have a real discipline around it where you have a timer. And you actually do time yourself for this time. And you have to, it's a muscle that's not developed. We have to retrain it. And I love this notion of looking at watching slower movies. I just noticed if you go back 10 years, notice the pace of movies were slower than today. Then you go back another decade and another decade until you get back to the 40s and 50s. And you see a totally different pace in movies. And it's just movies seem to be reflective on the speed of our culture.
Absolutely. Right. And it's that two-way relationship, which I find fascinating, right? Is that like our attention spans get shorter. So the demand for faster movies, right, increases. And then as our desire for faster movies increase, then our attention spans also get shorter. Right. And so it's resisting that, you know, as much as I love the Marvel superheroes, those are great movies. Okay. Great, wonderful movies, right? But that does not need to be the only form of stimulation, right? Because it's a very stimulating movie, right? And so, you know, finding places that are low stimulation, right? Like some of these older cartoons, like Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes, so much lower stimulation in terms of like the color saturation, the sound effects, the rate at which these like scenes happen, right? So much slower than, you know, some of these other cartoons that are coming out right now, you know?
So
I think like it's a huge thing. And like, this is also the joy of our technology, right? Like I think like technology is here to stay, right? We just kind of got to find ways of working with it, right? Like not saying get rid of your phone, toss your phone in the heap or, you know, delete all your social media accounts because that's not realistic, right? But what we can do is use technology to find streaming services that offer these lower stimulation movies and TV shows from earlier. Right? We can use technology to help us find good books that are worth sustaining our attention for. We can use technology and we can also find like ways to limit ourselves with technology too, just putting it out of sight so it doesn't seem as tempting.
Yeah, I love that notion. And it's been a good practice for me to put your phone turn it off and put it in a drawer for an evening. If you want to, I was asked this question actually yesterday by a workshop participant. How do you know if you're addicted to your phone? And I I just said, leave it in the car overnight. When you come in for supper with your family, with your relationship, just leave your phone in your car and see how much you miss it. So what kind of a transition is it to go through that? What's your experience of that? And we all are attached to this. So I think we have to really model these behaviors. But this is some great conversation to start to have with the people in our lives too, to start to think about, hey, how can we, and I think we get bored in relationships. And so we just exit relationships really quickly rather than just learn how to ride out the storm. It passes.
Yeah. Well, and I see this too, like with friends of mine who are doing like a lot of online dating and stuff, right? Like the idea of ghosting, right? I think it's also entirely connected to this, right? This idea of, you know, not responding to somebody instead of actually having these hard conversations, right? Or these hard, honest, important conversations. You just stop responding, right? And then the end, that's the end of the friendship or the relationship, the end, right? And so, you know, like that can be incredibly problematic and hurtful and leave people without a lot of answers as to why this happened and all of this, right? But again, it's just about, you know, doing the work, which can be hard at, you know, in the moment, but, you know, it's important
rather,
in the long term.
Rather than just having the courage to say, I don't want to pursue this relationship, and having the guts to say that, it's just, we just learn to turn off the technology.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. So, and I think that'll help us be more present. It'll help us be more grounded. And it'll help us, I think, to feel more productive and satisfied ultimately with our lives.
And I have to put a plug in for parents. Teach your kids how to invest. Take that money that you might give them for an allowance and teach them how to save. We cannot abdicate our responsibility. It lies on the shoulders of parents.
Yeah. And there's teacher, like even speaking, as a teacher, like there's only so much teachers can do if parents aren't behind you. Right. And so if you're, so you got to work as a team, and that means parents need to work as a team with themselves. Right. And we need to help support these growing minds. Right. Because they don't have a lot of frontal lobe developed yet to be able to think about the future, to think forward thinking and to be able to wait. Their brains aren't cognitively developed yet. So we need to be the adults in the room and help support these kids as they grow through life.
Well, and it'll make our own lives better as adults, as we learn to delay some of that gratification and learn how to be with boredom and learn how to be in the present moment instead of always needing our brain to be stimulated.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll feel really, really good. I don't know about you, Dad, but have you tried, I've started to wear noise canceling headphones, not actually putting music on, but just to like have the sound, like any, like essentially earplugs essentially, and have those in more and more often, especially like at work and things like that, because I just find like it just feels like so soothing and calming to just not have that noise, right? And it can be really like, it's just very calming and grounding and centering to just put in some earplugs and just go.
Well, it's a good way to live in a distracted, live undistracted in a distractive world, to really literally tune out the noise of the world. We're swinging the pendulum back to that, because we live with so much incessant noise continually coming at us that we got to take responsibility to diminish.
Well, it's even funny actually now, like this, I just thought of this now too. How often I will walk into a classroom getting ready to teach and kids are coming in and things, and I go and turn on the lights. Like, and of course, like we have a lot of daylight in our classrooms and things like that. Like it's never pitch black, but like the lights are not on. And how often when I go to turn the lights on, the kids revolt, they get upset, they complain. And I think now, like, I'm just kind of recognizing, I think that's just because so much of their life is full of stimulation. Right? That, you know, that having a light on is just one more piece of it that just puts them over the edge. And that's why they crave having like lower lighting. I just had this thought, and I bet that's why.
Wow. So, well, it's lots to reflect on as usual, and a lovely conversation. And as usual, we don't leave you with a lot of answers, but I hope we've left you with lots more questions. You might be as confused as ever, but hopefully now you're confused about higher things and about more important things in your life.
And hopefully it's time to get out the puzzles and the books. Put away the phones.
There you go. There you go. Well, so, Dad, my dear daughter, what are you grateful for?
You needed a punch. I am grateful for, I think, like, just like longer days, like lighter, brighter days. I really realize how, impacted by the daylight I am, and just by having, you know, longer, like having it bright, being bright out when I wake up and still bright out, you know, well after I get home from work has been such a huge thing. So I'm really, really grateful for that. And I'm always grateful to be able to, you know, think about these things that, you know, I wish I had the maturity to think about when I was a teenager, but to be able to kind of reflect on, you know, what does this mean? What skills are lagging? Because it's not just about, you know, teaching reading and writing. It's about, you know, teaching some of these life skills too.
Well, that's,
how about you, Dad? What are you
amazing?
Yeah.
What am I grateful for? Today, I'm grateful for dogs.
Yay! Great thing to be grateful for.
Just taking the dogs out in the morning and just being in the forest behind our home and just finding a different rhythm. That's the one time, well, there's several times during the day that I unplug my phone, but I never take my phone into the woods. And I just am, just experience being in nature and connecting with the rhythm of nature and slowing down to the speed of life. And it just brings me into a different awareness. And, you know, if it wasn't for dogs, I probably wouldn't have make that a discipline in the morning to do that religiously each day.
Dogs are the best. They teach us many, dogs in nature teach us many things.
Have you liked your Mary Oliver book on dogs?
I have. I don't know if our listeners know this, but Mary Oliver, one of our, you know, favorite poets, wrote a whole book on dogs. And just like the importance of dogs and things like that. And so it's in another room, but I will, I'll bring it for next week. I'll read some of the passages out loud, some of my favorite ones, but it's just so great. Like, the importance of dogs, they're just, nothing like, I mean, granted, I guess my dog is all about instant gratification, but he does, he will, you know, sacrifice me for a piece of cheese. However, but that being said, he does teach me about being patient. So while he himself is not about instant gratification, while he himself is not about waiting, he teaches me to do so.
That's great. Listen, it's always good. I love spending this time with you. And until our next episode, everybody stay real and remember to care about each other.